Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter Jr., and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The Philippines has informed the United States that it is ending a security agreement that permits American forces to train in the country. A spokesman for Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte said U.S. officials were informed of the decision on Tuesday. The ending of the agreement is set to become official in 180 days unless both sides agree to continue it. The 1998 agreement sets rules for U.S. military forces operating in the Philippines. The two nations hold many joint military exercises and training activities throughout the year. Presidential spokesman Salvador Pinelo told reporters the Philippines was withdrawing from the agreement to permit more independent relations with other countries. Philippine Foreign Secretary Teodoro Lacson said on Twitter that President Duterte ordered the end of the agreement. In a statement, the U.S. Embassy in Manila called the move a serious step with significant implications for the U.S.-Philippines alliance. It said U.S. officials will carefully consider how best to move forward to advance our shared interests. The embassy statement added, "Our two countries enjoy a warm relationship, deeply rooted in history. We remain committed to the friendship between our two peoples." Duterte has often criticized U.S. security policies while praising those of China and Russia, even though the Philippine military enjoys close historic ties with American forces. Duterte first warned of ending the deal in 2016 after a U.S. aid agency put a hold on money for anti-poverty projects in the Philippines. He then repeated the threat in a speech last month. The speech came after Ronald De La Rosa, the former national police chief who is now a senator, said the U.S. had canceled his visa but did not tell him why. Philippine officials view the cancellation as a punishment for De La Rosa's leadership of an anti-drug campaign Duterte launched in 2016. The government campaign has killed thousands of mostly poor drug suspects. It has drawn criticism from the United States, other Western nations, and human rights groups. Duterte decided to end the security agreement even after military generals and his defense and foreign ministers defended it during a Senate hearing last week. During the hearing, Lacson warned that canceling the agreement would harm Philippine security and could increase aggression in the disputed South China Sea. A U.S. military presence in the waterway has been seen as an important balance to China, which claims most of the South China Sea as its territory. At the hearing, Luxon said the agreement clearly provided security and economic benefits to both sides. He proposed seeking changes to improve the agreement rather than ending it. I'm Brian Lynn.
Hundreds of thousands of Iranians marked 41 years since the Islamic Revolution in the country as tensions with the U.S. and the world remain high. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani spoke in Tehran's Azadi Square Tuesday to denounce the United States. He also called on people to vote in upcoming elections. Last month, Iran's Guardian Council barred thousands of candidates from running, including about 90 current lawmakers. Iran considers many people voting in elections a show of confidence in the country's cleric rulers. Rouhani told a crowd, "We should not withdraw from the ballot boxes." However, a number of recent incidents have added to continued international pressure on the nation of more than 84 million people. Iran remains under international sanctions after the U.S. withdrew in 2018 from an international agreement meant to limit Iran's nuclear weapons program. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump objected to the deal. Officials said it did little to prevent Iran from developing nuclear materials or missiles. Early this year, the commander of the Revolutionary Guard's Quds Force, Qasem Soleimani, was killed in a U.S. strike in Baghdad. Large gatherings for his funeral, however, were marred by Iran's shooting down of a Ukrainian passenger jet. 176 people were killed. The Iranian government then refused for days to admit that it had shot down the plane with missiles. Iran and Ukraine continue to dispute the investigation of the downed airplane. In November, Iranians blocked traffic in major cities to protest an increase of 50% in government-set gasoline prices. The government reacted with a campaign against protesters. The human rights group Amnesty International said that more than 300 people were killed in the unrest. The government did not release the number of deaths, but lawmakers said thousands of people were detained. Tensions increased again in January after the killing of Soleimani, who had been linked to the use of roadside bombs used to attack American soldiers in Iraq. The Quds Force that he led is also involved in Middle East conflicts in Syria, Yemen, and other places. The Islamic Revolution in Iran began after Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi fled the country in January 1979. Islamic cleric Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini then returned from exile in Paris to become the country's leader. In November of that year, Iranians, angry that the Shah was receiving medical treatment in the U.S., seized the U.S. embassy and took more than 50 hostages. Iran held the hostages for more than 1 year before releasing them in early 1981. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Some adults and teachers may think young people want to spend all of their time using social media. But a recent survey shows that may not be true. It found that students sometimes want to turn off their electronic devices to get away from the pressure to take part in social media. For the study, researchers led a series of discussions at classes in the United States. They asked young people what they thought about social media. The survey was a project of Common Sense Media, a nonprofit group based in California, and a learning games platform called Kahoot. 8 out of 10 students said that some people think too much about their social media posts and are always trying to be perfect. About a third said it was acceptable to post a version of yourself on social media that's not 100% real. The students also talked about the issue of publishing unkind or hateful comments online. More than half of those questioned said that social media are tearing us apart more than they are bringing people together. With this in mind, how can teachers help? Today, we will look at how teachers can support good digital citizenship through safe, kind, and healthy use of social media. Common Sense Media defines digital citizenship as thinking critically, behaving safely, and participating responsibly in the digital world. Teachers can begin by talking with students about how they use social media. How does it make them feel? Do the young people want to change anything about the way they interact with others online? Teachers should learn what computer application programs their students use most often. Teachers should then use this information to keep in contact with students and share homework assignments. Next, define the words cyberbullying, digital drama, and hate speech. Young people need to recognize the differences among these issues and know how to deal with them. Common Sense Media has free lesson plans for all grade levels on digital citizenship. They include videos and other images to explain the ideas at the student's level. Digital drama is the everyday arguments and small problems that come up between friends or with other people you know online, or via text message. Hate speech means expressing hatred of a particular group of people. For younger students, this is called being mean. Teachers should let students know they are available to help when students face online problems. Experts say teachers should choose a social media app their students often use. Limit posts or messages to once per class period, or to what is necessary to provide information to students. Bailey DiPilato is an English teacher and lives in New Jersey. She told National Public Radio that she did not want to use Facebook to communicate with students because it is too personal. Although her students have email, she found they do not often look at it. DiPilato instead chose the social networking service Twitter to give out homework and reading materials. She says Twitter lets her share information quickly and show how to use social media in a professional, healthy way. Another idea is to get students to ask questions on the shared app, as one person's question is probably shared by others. Teachers have to make sure they do not help one individual without giving the same information to all students. Experts also say teachers need to set time limits for using social media with students. Teachers could say they will only answer questions until 9 at night on school nights, for example. They need to explain that adults, too, need to unplug sometimes and get away from their phones and computers. Part of digital citizenship is related to privacy. When sharing something done in class, teachers must remember to post pictures of students' work, but not of the students themselves. This is done to protect the online privacy of students. Social media, electronics, and digital resources are an increasingly large part of students' lives. Experts say that with the guidance of teachers and other adults, young people can learn to become good digital citizens. I'm Jill Robbins.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the years after World War I, new technologies changed America. Technology made it possible for millions of people to improve their lives. It also brought great changes in American society. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell more about the technological and social changes that took place in the United States in the early 1920s.
Some of the most important changes came as a result of the automobile and the radio. Automobiles began to be mass-produced. They were low enough in cost so many Americans could buy them. Gasoline was low in cost, too. Together, these developments put America on the move as never before. Automobiles made it easy for Americans to travel. Trucks made it easy for goods to be transported. Many people and businesses moved out of crowded, noisy cities. They moved to open areas outside cities, suburbs.
As automobiles helped Americans spread out, the radio helped bring them closer together. Large networks could broadcast the same radio program to many stations at the same time. Soon, Americans everywhere were listening to the same programs. They laughed at the same jokes, sang the same songs, heard the same news. Another invention that produced big changes in American life was the motion picture.
American inventor Thomas Edison began making short motion pictures at the turn of the century. In 1903, a movie called The Great Train Robbery was the first to tell a complete story. In 1915, D.W. Griffith made a long, serious movie called Birth of a Nation. By the early 1920s, many American towns had a movie theater. Most Americans went to see the movies at least once a week. The movie industry became a big business. People might not know the names of government officials, but they knew the names of every leading actor and actress.
Movies were fun. They provided a change from the day-to-day troubles of life. They also were an important social force. Young Americans tried to copy what they saw in the movies, and they dreamed about faraway places and a different kind of life. A young farm boy could imagine himself as romantic hero Douglas Fairbanks or comedian Charlie Chaplin. A young city girl could imagine herself as the beautiful and brave Mary Pickford. Rich families and poor families saw the same movies. Their children shared the same wish to be like the movie stars. In this way, the son of a banker and the son of a factory worker had much in common. The same was true for people from different parts of the country.
In the early 1920s, Americans also began reading the same publications. The publishing industry used some of the same kinds of mass production methods as the automobile industry. It began producing magazines in larger amounts. It began selling the same magazines all over the country. One of the most widely read magazines was the Saturday Evening Post. In 1902, it sold about 300,000 copies each week. 20 years later, it sold more than 2 million copies each week. Americans everywhere shared the same information and advice in such nationwide magazines. The information was not always correct. The advice was not always good. But the effect was similar to that caused by the automobile and radio. Parts of American society were becoming more alike. They were trying to move toward the same kind of life, economically and socially.
Other industries use the techniques of assembly line production to make their goods, too. They discovered that producing large numbers of goods reduced the cost of each one. One company that expanded in this way was the Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company. It was called A&P for short. The A&P was one of the first large American grocery stores to sell all kinds of food. It sold milk, meat, bread, canned fruits, and vegetables, all in the same store. Shopping at the A&P was much faster and easier than going to different stores to get different kinds of food. In 1912, A&P had 400 stores in the United States. About 10 years later, it had more than 11,000 stores. It could buy huge amounts of goods and sell each at a very low price.
Mass production also came to the clothing industry. People began wearing clothes made in factories instead of by a family member or local tailor. Before long, the same kinds of clothes could be found everywhere. Mass production removed some differences that had marked Americans in the past. Prices dropped, so people with little money could still buy nice clothes. It became more difficult to look at Americans and know by their clothes if they were rich or poor.
Social changes also resulted from great progress in medical research. Doctors and scientists reported new developments in the fight against disease. This progress gave most Americans a longer life. In 1900, for example, the average person in the United States could expect to live 49 years. By 1927, the average person could expect to live 59 years.
Life expectancy rates climbed because doctors and scientists developed effective ways to prevent or treat diseases such as tuberculosis, typhoid, diphtheria, and influenza. Yellow fever and smallpox were no longer a threat. One new medicine was insulin. It was used to treat diabetes. A man-made version gave diabetics the insulin their bodies did not have. It cut the death rate from the disease from 70% to about 1%. Doctors and scientists also learned the importance of vitamins to good health. Now they could cure several diseases caused by a lack of vitamins.
Americans in the 1920s lived much better than their fathers and mothers. A man received more pay than in the past, even though he worked fewer hours each day. He lived in a better house with new labor-saving devices. He had a car to drive to work and to take his family on holiday trips. He received a better education than his father. He and his family wore better clothes. They ate healthier foods. The average American in the 1920s had more time for sports and entertainment. He enjoyed listening to the radio and watching movies. He was more informed about national and world events.
Life was good for many Americans as World War I ended and the nation entered the 1920s, yet that life was far from perfect. Many Americans did not have the same chances to improve their lives. Black Americans continued to suffer from racism. Society continued to deny them their rights as citizens. Women did not have equal rights either. For example, they could not vote. It was during this time that the United States experienced one of its worst incidents of public hatred. Many people turned strongly against labor unions and leftists. They feared a threat to democracy. The federal government took action against what it called political extremists. Many of the charges were unfair. Many innocent lives were harmed.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.